Hey everybody, thanks for hitting the download button on the Mania Mania podcast. Joy and I have had a really fun time reliving some of the best and worst moments from the WrestleMania's past, and we want to include you in the fun for upcoming episodes, so send us an email with your best and worst moments of any future WrestleMania that we haven't covered yet to mymaniamania@gmail.com, and we'll include your thoughts and your comments in our next podcast. So please keep hitting the download button, subscribe to iTunes, and enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Mania Mania!
Welcome to Mania Mania 11. I am your host, Terry Home Improvement Catlett. Here as always with the best tag team partner in the world, NYPD Blues, Jouet Holt.
Hey.
Today we're going to review for you WrestleMania 11. Now, WrestleMania 10 is in the books, and 365 days later, we are here at WrestleMania 11. And what has happened in the last year to lead up to this event, Mr. Jouet?
Well, specifically at the Royal Rumble, Lawrence Taylor from the...
Football's Lawrence Taylor?
Football's Lawrence Taylor. The New York Football Giants.
Hall Lawrence of Taylor. Fame linebacker?
That's correct. Number Lawrence 56, Taylor? Lawrence Taylor.
Non-wrestler Lawrence Taylor?
That's also correct, yes. Okay. Non-wrestler Lawrence Taylor was in the crowd, and Bam Bam Bigelow had recently lost a match.
Mm-hmm.
And he was walking around the ring, and then he saw Lawrence Taylor, who Lawrence Taylor was making fun of him for losing. And then Bam Bam's like, hey, that's not cool. And then LT goes to shake his hand, and then Bam Bam shoves him and, like, throws him. He threw him pretty far.
Yeah.
And then LT got all mad. So then that sets up
a match. Sounds like we need a fight.
Yeah, we need a fight. In an event that I'm really good at and you have no experience in.
Right, so we're just going to do this at a house show, right? Like,
yeah,
just
right.
Try it out?
Yeah, or like maybe opening match on Raw.
Uh-huh.
No, actually, we're going to headline WrestleMania with this.
That's how we do it?
Yeah, perfect. So that's going to be the main event
Wow.
of the evening.
What did you think when you because you were again a kid when you saw this? Yeah,
yeah. Yep.
I was kind of out of the wrestling watching mode at this time.
Okay,
but even this kind of drew my attention back to it. Now, when you're a kid,
yeah.
and you're watching this, what do you think when you see Lawrence? Did you know who Lawrence Taylor was at the time?
No, because I was not that big of a fan, a football fan.
Right.
So I was like, I don't know what's happening here.
Right.
And then my dad's like, oh, he's a football player. I'm like, okay. And like, this doesn't make sense.
What, do you remember what you thought of like this kind of gimmick main event, or was it just another kind of match for you?
I don't remember, so therefore I did not have strong feelings about it.
Okay.
Because I remember when I watched WrestleMania 9, I was scared of Yokozuna.
Yes.
So I was like, I do not want to be near this man.
Right.
But WrestleMania 11? Don't even remember. So,
okay.
Did not give a shit about Lawrence Taylor.
What was the other big angle going into WrestleMania 11?
The other big angle was Shawn Michaels and Diesel.
So, there's because in the last one, Diesel was the faithful sidekick of Shawn Michaels.
Yes.
Now he's the WWF champion.
Mm-hmm.
And what has kind of torn them apart in the last year, so to speak?
They were the tag team champions
okay.
at the Survivor Series.
Right.
And at one point, Shawn Michaels he accidentally kicked Diesel right in the face.
Oh, no.
It was a super kick. So then, obviously, that splits up the team.
That's right.
And then Diesel becomes the WWF champion because he beat Bob Backlund in 9 seconds at a house show. And then Royal Rumble 1995, Shawn Michaels won.
Okay.
So you get a title shot when you win the Royal Rumble.
And of course.
Since Diesel was the champion, he gets the number one contender strip.
Fantastic.
And also there was another thing. If you won the Royal Rumble, then Pamela Anderson was going to walk down the aisle with you.
Well, that's a wonderful prize
yeah.
for winning the Royal Rumble.
Yes. Or it was definitely something to do with, like, if you won something, Pamela Anderson would walk down the aisle with you.
Well,
that's why Shawn got it.
That would make me want to win the Royal Rumble.
Right.
Tommy Lee didn't even have to win a Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
He gets to walk down the aisle.
He just had
to
play drums for Dr. Feelgood.
Well, if you can't play drums, become a professional wrestler and win the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
And you will get Pamela Anderson for one long walk down to the ring.
I think that's what Lawrence Taylor was going for, you know.
Well.
He had to start somewhere.
Well, let me set the stage for WrestleMania 11, April 2nd, 1995. Where were you? I know where I was. But they were at Hartford Civic Center in Hartford, Connecticut. 16,305 people as the reported attendance, ready for the biggest event in sports entertainment. And we open with the video highlight package of basically every celebrity that has graced the WrestleMania stage, because that's kind of the gimmick for this one is, hey, look, we know famous people, and they're willing to come to WrestleMania.
And they like it.
I thought of you several times during the Bob Uecker flashbacks.
Yeah.
But we have a whole new line of celebrities that are ready to be a part of WrestleMania 11. Mm-hmm. And then we go to a wonderful crowd shot of the Hartford Civic Center. There are signs. We love Diesel. We love HBK. We love Bret Hart. Still no Hulk Hogan. So the yellow and red is gone.
They're out.
I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah.
And then we do an intro to a substitute singer of America the Beautiful. Her name is Kathy Huey. She's a Special Olympian.
Mm-hmm.
The Fishbone was supposed to do America the Beautiful, but for one reason or another, maybe because there was no Pam Anderson prize, they did not perform, and this wonderful Special Olympian is singing America the Beautiful, gets a wonderful response.
Yes.
We have a video screen with Special Olympians achieving. It's a really good feel-good moment to launch WrestleMania 11, and then we go to Vince and the King, still has yet to find a shirt in the WWF at this time, and they are welcoming us to WrestleMania 11.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of, like, I was going to ask you, Lawler in the first one, you didn't really kind of dig his style of announcing it because he was kind of faux heel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now he's gone full on goofball.
Yeah.
What did you think of how he was approaching it this time? Is he starting to kind of hone it and come? Or is he still far away from the King that we know and love?
I think he was still far away. And I while watching this one, I figured it out. It's because of his tone. He's coming at it with, like, such an aggressive tone.
Right.
But then he's talking about some, like, he's going to have to wait. Like, he couldn't spend 99 cents at a dollar store or some crap like that. And, you know, like, dumb jokes. And
he,
like,
didn't know what a silver – he couldn't tell you what a silver dollar was made of.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And, like – he's so aggressive with his tone, but then he's making fun of them in such a childish way.
Right.
I think that's what bothered me.
Okay.
I realized that.
So as of 1995, we're still far away from the King that we know and love.
Yes.
But he and Vince are going to be our tag team commentators for this event.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Ross is also involved, but still doing weird interviews from inside the building somewhere. So
playing the Sean Mooney role.
Yeah, goodness gracious. But this kicks us off, and we go right to match number one between
the Allied Powers, Lex Luger and British Bulldog Davey Boy Smith versus the Blue Brothers, Jacob and Eli Blue with Uncle Zebekiah.
Something that stuck out to me right immediately is that the apron, or the area right around the ring, is filled with photographers.
Yeah.
And that reminds me back all the way back to WrestleMania 1, and I don't know what the thought was here, but it really, and I kind of saw throughout a lot of the matches that were happening after that, just how it kind of limits their play outside of the ring.
Yeah.
So I just couldn't figure out why they were doing it this time. I don't know why they went back to that.
I'm saying it has to be because of LT and the exposure. So maybe they said, like, hey, Sports Illustrated, you want a ringside? You want like ESPN, you want ringside? Yeah. One of the cameramen had he was a full suit, but then wearing a backwards baseball cap.
Right,
that just doesn't work for me.
But it kind of set the tone. We're like, we've kind of taken a step back here.
Mm-hmm.
We're not, you know, we've seen, like, over the last three or four WrestleManias that they're starting to kind of wind down from the popularity maybe they had in the, I guess, late 80s, early, like, 1990.
The Hogan era, we can call
and,
it.
And, you know, maybe 6 and 7, like, where maybe they were at their peak.
Yeah.
And we're still having trouble kind of selling this thing,
mm-hmm.
because our main event is a gimmick.
Yes.
All these celebrity tie-ins to draw eyes to the product, we're having to kind of cater to that, which is kind of messing with our product. Like, I thought that this product, like, we praised kind of how they found what the production was in WrestleMania 10. To me, I thought this was a giant step back as far as how we're promoting ourselves and producing this event.
The microphones weren't working. The lights weren't working at all times. It was dumb.
Right. This was my first time seeing the Blue Brothers, but they're these giant, kind of hillbilly types.
Yep. Multiple times, Vince called them mountain men.
Right. I thought it was interesting during this match that he could never get the correct name for each one. Although, and they are twins, but they have very distinct different tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that just made me laugh every time. Because, hey, that one guy's got this weird tattoo on his right arm. Clearly, it's him every time.
They did come back later on as Skull and 8-Ball. And they were Skull and Chains.
Right.
8-Ball and Chains, whatever. They were part of the Disciples of Apocalypse, which was like a biker gang with Crush. And they had shaved heads, so it was even tougher.
Of course, yeah.
Tougher to tell them
Well,
apart.
They had huge manes of hair. It was just, they had an interesting look to them. But they were really agile, and I thought this was a pretty decent match. I was surprised that Lex Luger and the British Bulldog were teaming up with one another, mm-hmm. but they seemed to work fairly well together. This is a little over 6.5-minute match. This is our opening match. Maybe not the firework. Like last year, we had the Hearts put on a clinic.
Mm-hmm.
This one, this card just seemed really thin to me, and so I didn't think that this match really got us off to the best start. But what did you think of the pace of this match?
Yeah, it was a decent match overall. The beginning of the match when they were start out like with high energy, and then the good guys always knock the bad guys out, so then they can celebrate one more time. At that point, Luger basically slammed I don't know the name, so I'm just gonna say Eli. Slammed Eli on top of the Bulldog and Jacob. I'm like, what do you do? That's super dangerous. That is so dangerous. Just stop it. And it was decent. Like they had some good. I said the Blues had that classic team that look alike. So they did the moves where you one guy goes on the outside of the ring, so then the other twin slides in, because he's fresh.
Right.
I always like that.
Well, no, they had that little spot where Luger was just punishing whichever one.
Yeah, and then just come Jacob.
He had him down for the pin, and then the other, the ref kind of interrupted, and they took his attention, and then they just switch out. And then now we've got the fresh one, which actually kind of leads to the end of this match, where I think, Luger's kind of starting to be put up in a powerbomb situation. He ends up tagging the Bulldog.
Yeah.
And then the Bulldog comes in and does a Somerset flip.
Yeah.
Or Sunset flip. Somerset, whatever. The Bulldog comes
Somerset,
in.
Somerset, England. Davey Boy Smith from Somerset, England.
The Bulldog tags in and does a Sunset flip and then gets the 1-2-3.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I put Bulldog gave one of the worst sunset flips, but still efficient.
It counted.
Yeah, and still effective, I should say.
It was devastating enough to knock the guy out enough to get 1-2-3. And the winners of this match are the Allied Powers of Lex Luger and British Bulldog. And they started doing this other kind of weird bit in this match where that Jim Ross would start to interview people coming back from the ring. Not even in the back, just kind of in the aisle as they're... I don't know. It just seems so odd to me.
Yeah.
Because to me, that's the time when they're kind of selling the defeat or, the victory, as it were. And it's not a time for a promo.
Right. Later on, Shawn Michaels, when after his match, he, doesn't say anything, but Sid talks. Mm-hmm. And then when they go to the back, Shawn Michaels does interview.
Yeah, now he's all revived and probably had smelling salts, and he's super fresh to cut a promo.
But, this one, it's funny. Zebekiah, who's... Zeb Coulter in current WWE.
Right.
He's with Jack Swagger. Now he's currently with Alberto Del Rio.
Right.
He's great on the mic, but he says, I knew when we came to the big city we were going to get hornswoggled. And he's like, that wasn't even the right man, because they switched out. And he's like,
hornswoggled indeed, Zebekiah.
Hornswoggled indeed.
That's what happens when you come to the big city in Hartford.
Yeah.
So then, right after that, right after Jim Ross interviews Zebekiah, we go right to our Johnny on the spot in the back.
Mm-hmm.
It is NYPD Blues Nick Turturro.
Yes.
And he's looking for Pam Anderson, we think, but we don't know because there's no audio in the shot.
The mic was not working.
My favorite part of that is, because we're watching him just say things and we can't hear them. My favorite part was when they cut back to Vince and he's just laughing.
Yeah. Ha ha ha.
But it's laughter like saying... people are getting fired for it's the most kind of nervous laughter.
Yeah,
I can't. What the fuck's going on? Yeah. Who am I not paying back in the truck?
It's fun. I like to think that he took the commentator role because he's like, all right, I cannot control these guys, so I need to be on the mic.
Right,
and then everything else around him just falls apart. He's like, oh, what am I doing?
because if we haven't painted the picture clear enough in this, this entire pay-per-view is a mess.
Yeah, technically it difficult is a technical all over. Mess. Yeah, but there was when he comes back and goes ha ha ha, and then they show like signs in the crowd. One of them says King Kong Dumbo, and then Vince and then Vince goes, "What does that mean?" Then there's another sign that just said the word blood.
Yeah,
I'm like, all right.
Hey, that fan knows what he wants.
Yeah, he just blood.
He's going to ask for it.
All right, thank you.
Blood. So that takes us to match number two between
Razor Ramon with the 1-2-3 Kid versus Double J Jeff Jarrett with the Roadie.
And this is for the Intercontinental Belt. And Jeff Jarrett comes to the ring in his little light-up suit.
Yep.
And his hat with just the big J's on it.
Yeah.
He is over the top officially. And then Razor comes to the ring, and he's full on Ramon, yeah. Which looks good.
I love his music.
He had a great entrance back then.
Yeah,
and really good pop. Like mm-hmm. He's fully over as a babyface, which is also odd to see.
Yeah,
because all I really kind of knew, I didn't. Again, I wasn't watching WWF at this time. All I really know him is the NWO heel.
Yeah,
and then after, but. Yeah, this one gets started off right away. Like they have this planned entrance for him with fireworks and everything.
Yeah,
but he forgoes all that and just starts, beating on.
beating on Double J.
And then they do the firework thing.
Yeah, that was very weird.
Yeah,
because also like 1-2-3 Kid was still just standing in the ring. The bell rung, and then because the action started, and then when they knocked Jeff Jarrett out of the ring, the fireworks go off. I'm like. Guys, you gotta plan that part out. Like, I know that you're at this point, like, they were very much not planning out matches, like, move by move, or right. Like some people were, but overall, it was like, call it in the ring. But this one's like, all right, let me get the fireworks first, and right. Then we can start the match.
Are you a Jeff Jarrett fan?
I liked him in this match.
Yeah.
I wasn't like, oh, this guy, I love this guy. But a lot of times it was, I've heard just things about.
Oh, just his personal stuff.
Yeah, that I just didn't necessarily care for.
Right.
But in the ring, I don't have strong feelings for him either way, I would say.
Well, the reason I ask is this is kind of his first mm-hmm. WrestleMania introduction, right? Yeah. And I thought these two had a really good match together.
Absolutely.
Scott Hall, I think, has the best working punch that I've ever seen. He just makes it look so good.
Yeah.
And, these guys I thought worked really well together. And then you've got that element on the outside of, 1-2-3 Kid, which may be the worst moniker of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Although, like, I don't like the way he kind of pumps up the crowd.
Yeah.
To me, every time he was on camera, he just looked like he felt awkward.
Because mm-hmm.
I've seen interviews with him, and he sounds like he knows the business and he knows what he's doing. He just never had that on-camera charisma.
Yeah.
He just always kind of looked like a doofus.
Yeah.
And then seeing...
Doofus is a good word for Sean Wall.
Yeah, seeing the Road Dog for the first time.
Yeah.
That was pretty great. But just I was just kind of waiting for all the... Every time there are people outside the ring, I'm just kind of waiting for that kind of to get going.
Yeah.
But I thought this match was really good, and it ended with... Scott Hall trying to get him up in the Razor's Edge.
Yeah.
And then, Road Dogg's going to come in and stop it.
Yeah. So. Give him a nice chop block.
And then there was a lot of aftermatch shenanigans in this one.
Which Jeff Jarrett ended up coming away with a bloody nose.
I saw that.
Like, that's pretty legit.
Do you think Sean Waltman didn't pull his kick enough?
Yeah, probably. Because, Waltman looks like pretty legit with those kicks. Also, he's wearing a kimono, so...
That...
Or whatever.
Again, what a doofus.
Yeah.
But, because right after this ends, Sean Waltman just starts attacking everyone in the ring.
Yeah.
Or not everyone. He starts attacking Road Dogg.
Yeah.
Road Dogg comes in to stop the match, and then, mm-hmm. Sean Waltman attacks him, and then Jeff Jarrett attacks Sean Waltman from behind.
Yeah.
And then they start beating each other, and nine referees had to come out and separate all this stuff out.
Well, I mean, they needed, five to stop Miss Elizabeth at WrestleMania 8, so,
right.
I mean,
Sean
Waltman's at least four.
At least two. He's at least two Elizabeths.
Yeah, he needs at least four referees more.
But then JR is trying to, again, interview Jeff Jarrett on the way out. And just more threats as he's bleeding from the mouth.
Yeah. JR doesn't even like ask him a question. He goes, "You should be ashamed of yourself."
Right?
Like, that's not even a question. Like,
I'm just here to chastise you.
Yeah.
But but yeah, so this match kind of ends with a mess of shenanigans. But then we cut back to Nick in the dressing room. He's looking for Pam Anderson, but this time he's doing it with sound.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Because this is the exact same bit, like the exact same wording and everything, same script.
Push the bit to the next segment, damn it. So yeah, he's back in the dressing room with a bunch of wrestlers. Mm-hmm. And Jenny McCarthy is there. Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, it's Jennifer McCarthy at this point.
Very sorry.
This is literally the only time I've heard it called Jennifer McCarthy.
Ever. And I stand corrected, and I will not make that mistake again. So he interviews Miss Jennifer McCarthy.
Yes.
And then the HBK walks in with Sid, who is fully psycho at this point.
Yeah, he's going nuts.
And they cut a little promo back in the dressing room. And then King Kong Bundy starts to enter the ring.
Yep.
And now back from WrestleMania 2, the main eventer is back almost 10 years later to get his ass kicked.
Yep, that's fair.
But before this match starts, after King Kong Bundy enters the ring, we have a little ringside interview with Todd interviewing Neil Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells him to get in a stance.
Again, three-point stance. Yeah,
so he gets up and gets in a stance for him.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, weird. Okay, cool.
And then he asks him what he thinks LT's chances are, and he thinks LT's going to be okay.
Yeah.
But, just the selling of this entire – basically anyone who had any prestige whatsoever was getting on a microphone and going to have an interview.
I kind of wish you just said, oh, he's going to get his ass kicked.
Right.
LT has no chance.
No chance whatsoever. But then the gong rings, and then that means it's time for match 3 between
King Kong Bundy with the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase versus The Undertaker with Paul Bearer.
And we have Larry Young as a special guest referee. I have no idea who that is.
American League umpire Larry Young.
Ooh.
So they brought in a baseball umpire for this match.
Well, you need that. I don't know why.
I don't get it. What's the point?
Undertaker gets a huge pop.
Yeah.
He is fully over, and he heads to the ring. I actually kind of saw a little. I don't know if it was if it was him selling or not, but Bundy looked a little scared, like legit.
Yeah.
Oh, you hear all these stories. Like Stone Cold Steve Austin even tells a story where I think it was his first match with Taker, and just that entrance, just like he was trying to go through the match in his head, think about what's going to be happening.
Yeah.
And just that entire entrance just kind of got him out of his – like, he was actually legit kind of worried.
Yeah, I've heard lots of people say that, like, the gong hits and then the lights go out. Well, also, this entrance was vastly improved over the previous one we saw, which is at WrestleMania 9, so it was outside, which was difficult. But, yeah, the lights go out, the gong hits, thunder crashes. Like, it's nice. It's a great entrance.
Intimidating, and Bundy looked intimidated.
Mm-hmm.
And Bundy looked intimidated. But this match is about 6.5 minutes, not too long. What was kind of peculiar to me was that Bundy was doing hard sell for the early part of this match.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure why we were trying to sell him as an immovable object for someone like The Undertaker.
Right.
Like, The Undertaker did the walk the rope bit really early.
Yeah.
And it didn't even knock Bundy down. He just kind of staggered for a little bit.
Yeah.
And it seemed like it took a lot of shots to get Bundy even on the ground, which... I guess I just didn't understand why we were trying to build Bundy up as maybe something that no one in the audience even kind of thought was possible. I don't know. It just seemed kind of weird that he was doing the hard sell early
on. I think it's definitely interesting for him to sell like that against The Undertaker, because The Undertaker's taller than him.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah, he's a couple inches taller than him. Obviously, Bundy's bigger than him. But that makes sense if he was facing... like the 1-2-3 kid.
Right.
Then sell like that. But when you're facing a guy that's bigger than you, it seems.
Yeah, The Undertaker doesn't look like someone that can't be devastating.
Right.
So that's just why it kind of. I don't know. It seemed like they were trying to do it more for Bundy than they were trying to put Undertaker over.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seemed kind of weird.
Also, the walking the ropes, which they called old school now.
Really?
Yep. It makes no sense to me. In a world where wrestling is real, it doesn't make sense that you're going to just let your opponent tightrope walk.
Right.
And then hit you. Like, obviously, he's like, his arm's twisted. But if you just, like, push in that direction,
right,
Undertaker's just going to fall off the ropes. So in a world where wrestling is real, this shouldn't, you should never let this happen. With that being said, I love the move, and it's amazing.
We had a weird little kind of gimmick in this match where Ted DiBiase had the urn of the Undertaker.
Yes.
And there's a kind of little spot in this match where Bundy knocks Undertaker over the rope, mm-hmm. and he kind of just kind of windmills over it and lands on his feet. It looked really cool.
Yeah.
And then he lands on his feet right next to Ted DiBiase, and he just kind of turns and just rips the urn out of his hands.
Yeah, just, this is mine.
Which, look, yeah, I'll take that back now.
Yeah.
Hands it to Paul Bearer, and then Kama comes down from the back.
Yep.
To then take it from Paul Bearer.
Yes.
And as he's fleeing to the back,
mm-hmm.
Jim Ross has enough time to do an interview with him
during mid-match. The match.
And that drove me nuts.
Yeah.
Why are we distracting ourselves from the match? Maybe because, well, we'll get back to that.
Okay.
But I was just distracted and I didn't want to be at this time. But,
right.
But Kama says, "Hey, I'm gonna take this urn, I'm gonna melt it down for some jewelry."
Yeah.
Okay.
Which he actually did.
He did.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, he probably didn't actually melt on the urn. They probably just got him a necklace.
That's true. But did the jewelry have supernatural powers after that? Or I don't know what became of it. It just seemed weird to be kind of working all of these angles.
Yeah.
But the one thing I thought about this match was that there was no real chemistry between Taker or Bundy. A lot of, you know, it seemed like they were having problems selling for each other or just knowing what move. It seemed like the communication was off a little bit.
Yeah.
I just didn't think they worked very well together at all.
Mm-hmm. But, it's funny that, like, the streak was so well known, but you watch the early matches of the streak, they're not very good. Like,
that's what I'm saying.
He had a lot of, like, stinkers. And not, like, Taker did as well as he possibly could.
Right.
Like, especially again, like, at 9. He had to face Giant Gonzalez,
right.
Which is garbage. King Kong Bundy, not very good. I mean, Bundy's good for what he is. It's just difficult.
Yeah, I just didn't think he was good in this match. Like,
yeah.
For some reason, it didn't seem like he wanted to sell for Taker.
Yeah. It's like the characters don't mesh well.
Right. But, like, you know, hey, listen, this guy's going to is the new wave, and he's going to be the new established superstar. You need to look like you're being devastated.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as this match ended up, you know, Taker did, like, you know, the big body slam, and Bundy just got right back up.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, he's not selling that he's really being hurt.
Right.
And so, like, you know, Taker gets the big clothesline and gets the pin for the win, but Bundy got right up after the
and just
three.
That was, like, way too, I do not like that.
And so it almost seemed like Bundy didn't want a job,
mm-hmm.
which, I don't know. That was kind of the undertone of this match, and it just really bothered me that Bundy didn't look like he wanted to sell for the Undertaker.
Yeah. I didn't like that. That happened in quite a few of these matches where the people that lost were just gone immediately so that JR could interview them, which I don't know if that was, like, what they were thinking, but that doesn't make sense.
No.
Like, again, if you're in a world where wrestling is real, they're supposed to be defeated, and they should take a few seconds at least to sell it more instead of rushing out to the aisleway to be interviewed by good old JR.
There were a lot of things in this pay-per-view that undermined the product, and I think it really affected it in the end. I really do. We cut right to Nick outside Pamela Anderson's dressing room because he's still looking for her.
Yep, it's his job.
He then reports that she and the Heartbreak Kid had a fight.
Ooh.
But good news, there's a lot of NFL All-Pros standing by.
Yep.
So we can talk to them.
For LT's All-Pro team.
We interview Mongo McMichael, Reggie White, Carl Banks, Chris Spielman.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those you may have heard of. We get kind of the idea of Mongo maybe wanting to go into professional wrestling because he cuts a fairly decent promo.
And then he ended up going into professional wrestling.
He did. But then Nick is not satisfied. He's going to keep looking for Pam Anderson.
Yes.
So then he opens one of the doors, and behind the door is Bob Backlund playing chess with Jonathan Taylor Thomas of Home Improvement fame.
Yep.
This was quite a bizarre segment.
Mm-hmm.
Because Nick goes in to interview the two of them.
Yeah.
He's asking questions, but he doesn't put the microphone in front of the face of the person that's talking.
Yeah.
And so it's basically just watching Nick trying to catch up with the conversation with the microphone.
Yep.
And to me, that was the only funny part of the bit, not the actual bit itself.
Yeah.
It's just,
I thought it was acted much better. It was nice seeing, like, Totoro and JTT actually know how to act, and then Bob Backlund understanding his character,
right.
So that it was played out more smoothly than almost every other comedy bit ever we've seen so far.
Still not the highest bar in the world, but no,
exactly. I'm not saying it's by any other metrics. This is not a good bit,
but based on 11 years of WrestleMania, really not a bad bit.
Yeah, not bad.
The only problem was not amplified because the microphone's not in the right place.
Right,
but hey. We're just trying to be critical.
Yeah. What are you going
to
do?
Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go to match number four, Zhui. Let's go to the ring because we got a match between
Owen Hart and Yokozuna with Mr. Fuji and Jim Cornette versus the Smoking Buns, Billy and Bart.
And this is for the Tag Team Championship of the Universe. Mm-hmm. And Owen comes down to the ring first because we've got a type of secret partner situation.
Yep.
And so he gets on the mic and he announces who his secret partner is going to be. And you just... ruin the spoiler for everybody.
No.
That's all right, because I'm going to still act like Jerry the King did, because it's Yokozuna, and Jerry goes nuts.
Yeah.
Like, legit nuts.
They also mentioned that they have a French announce team, and then Jerry Lawler, I was like, he is not funny. He goes, parlez-vous fried eggs?
Okay.
Like, that's not funny.
We're still a couple years away.
Yeah.
We're still a couple years away.
Yeah, he's just getting the ball rolling.
He's getting all the shit out.
Yeah.
And then he's gonna rally. But then instead of just letting them come down the ring and take care of business, let's interview the Smoking Guns.
Yes.
About how they feel about the secret opponent.
Yeah.
And apparently they feel fine.
Yep.
Not great interview, the Smoking Guns.
No, Bart's not great.
Yeah, let's get him down to the ring. Jim Cornette is ringside with Mr. Fuji, like you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas in last year's WrestleMania, he was dressed like a weird pirate admiral.
Yep.
This time he's in a much more traditional, which is much more pleasing to my eye, of his blazer and tennis racket, which I enjoyed very much. I still don't understand why Yokozuna needs two managers.
Yeah.
But all right,
one gets the left side, and then the other one gets the right side of you.
That's right. This match, I really like this match a lot.
Yeah, this is a really good match.
I was wondering because it seemed like the Smoking Guns worked really well together.
Mm-hmm.
The two partners, they have kind of comparable body shapes and sizes. They look really good together. Mm-hmm. They did a lot of great double moves.
Mm-hmm.
One being the double drop kick on Yokozuna that launched him through the ropes and straight out to the floor.
Yeah,
which was a huge bump to me from a 9,000-pound man. Something about this match is that all the participants were very agile and active, including Yokozuna.
Yeah.
Now, Yokozuna could only do, like, really small spots, but the ones that
he did
were
really
pretty
well.
Fantastic. Yeah. So it was basically kind of Owen probably carrying the majority of the legwork of the match, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Because this was about a 10-minute match.
Yeah.
But so we got the guns just beating on him most of the time, but then Yoko would come in and do some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, Yokozuna, like, he's great. And, like, not just for a big guy, just, like, for everybody, you know?
Right.
Well, you don't need the qualifier. He's just a great wrestler. His belly-to-belly suplex is amazing.
It looks like it hurts so bad.
And it is so smooth. It was...
Like, it is quick.
Yeah, very quick. He understood his character. I've mentioned it before. He understood his character. And, like, obviously he gets tired because he's a big dude, and like at the end of the match he's like leaning against the ropes because he's tired, but mm-hmm. when he's in that match he's going, he is not stopping.
Yeah. There was a kind of a big segment in this match where Yoko's going to town on one of the guns, and so he's kind of got him in front of him, kind of pinned, holding him up because mm-hmm. Owen's going to the top rope to do the missile drop kick.
Yeah,
really good missile drop kick, a lot of force. Gun slips it. And he hits Yoko really great with the missile drop kick,
mm-hmm.
but Owen lands so hard on the back of his head.
Oh, yeah.
Did you remember that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was kind of a big deal.
That I always get, anytime somebody like gets near their head, I'm like, oh no, stop, please.
Yeah, this one kind of had a, it looked, I don't know if they didn't do the finish the way they wanted to, but this match kind of wrapped up with Yoko going up to the second rope to do the bonsai mm-hmm. drop on Billy Gunn. He does it. Yoko then tags Owen in.
Yeah. Well, it seemed to me like Bart Gunn came in and he shouldn't have.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Because there was some confusion.
Yes.
That, like, it just seemed like something weird was going on. Yoko was looking outside the ring.
Yeah.
He kind of tags Owen, comes in. Owen starts to put on
the sharpshooter.
And then just stops and pins him.
Yeah.
So I don't. Yeah. It was just an odd...
It was pretty odd. Because it seemed to me like right before that, Owen pulled the rope down when Bart was running the ropes. Owen pulled the rope down. Bart goes outside. From what I was when I was watching it, it looked like Bart should have been selling that for the rest of the match.
Okay.
Or like Owen should have attacked him on the outside. But instead, Bart got up faster than potentially he should have, or maybe there's just miscommunication. Because, yeah, at the end of a bonsai drop, the match is over.
Like, yeah.
You can't get up from bonsai drop.
Exactly. And I just plus there's also no need to put on a finishing move or a submission move to someone that's knocked out.
Yeah.
But, you know, for such a good match, I thought the ending could have been better. Obviously, there was a mistake, but
yeah.
It was just a shame that the end was not as smooth as I thought the rest of the match was. I really enjoyed this match.
Yeah.
Right after this match, we go to Vince announcing the Stridex airship floating above the it's like those little mini blimps that's floating above the crowd, because this is the first WrestleMania that is sponsored, and it's sponsored by Stridex.
Yeah.
So
those acne pads that you would wipe on your face.
That's right. And Jerry has a great line about the 1-2-3 kid needing all that he can get. Yeah. So I don't know. We're taking a dig at Waltman right there. Yeah. But then we go right to the back where Todd is interviewing Bam Bam Bigelow.
Mm-hmm.
And Bam Bam's got a lot of things to say in his New Jersey, New York accent.
Yeah.
One of the things he says is that he's not going to be known as the man that loses to LT. Which is not true.
Sorry, buddy. you are not clairvoyant.
You are in fact going to be the man that's known that you are in fact going to be the man that is known for losing to LT.
Yes. And bringing shame to the entire federation.
Shame to the entire profession.
Yes.
Not a great interviewer. Not the worst I've seen.
Right.
But for such a really great in-ring performer, I just, you know, he's got to do that tough guy, I guess, New York thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I don't know, maybe it was the way Todd was asking him questions. I didn't find him building up the momentum for the match with this promo.
Yeah, very good.
But we go right from that to match number 5 between
Bob Backlund versus Bret the Hitman Hart.
This is an I Quit match with Roddy Piper as our special referee.
Yeah, man, that guy just loves coming back.
Well, he loves coming back as a special referee. Yeah. This is what, the second or third straight
second
in a row for sure.
Yep.
As a special referee.
Because he wasn't in 9.
But a huge pop for Piper. It's too bad his wrestling days are over because we could have used him wrestling in this pay-per-view. But he comes down to just a huge response, huge face response for Piper, as always. Something that really surprised me when Backlund came down was exactly how much heat that he had.
Mm-hmm.
He, I guess they did something right with the heel turn with Hart because he was widely hated.
Yeah, he was.
And I was, because he's kind of like this clean cut, you know, I've never thought of him as, you know, he doesn't have like the physical presence of someone that looks like a bad guy. Or,
right.
You know, he's wearing a bathrobe and a towel.
Yeah.
He just doesn't have like that look to him. But he was really, really hated.
Yeah, he was.
This match.
It's funny. He was announced as being from Minnesota, which, like, that's historically where they've always announced him from. But apparently he was currently living in Connecticut. So Vince McMahon's like, Backlund in his hometown, so to speak. I'm like, well, if you're don't announce him from Minnesota if you're going to later on say that he's in his backyard.
From Minnesota by way of Connecticut, by way of wherever, from Canada.
Yeah.
But then Bret Hart is announced, the music hits, and Bret Hart comes to the stage, and he's got a big pop, quite possibly the biggest baby face in the company at this time.
Yeah,
he gets a great response. This match was kind of an odd match because it was kind of a submission special because they're going for this I Quit thing, which always means, to me, a lot of just slow moments of being in a submission move.
Yes.
So it's a few devastating blows, and then we're on the ground in some type of wrestling hold that's supposed to, you know, get the I Quit. To me, the only great part of this match was Piper with the microphone just asking after the most innocuous thing happens if someone quits. Like, we were 2 hits into it, and he's got the mic going, "Do you quit?"
So loudly.
It was he was having fun.
Yeah, he was.
Which was great. Was there anything about this match that you liked a lot?
That I liked a lot? Not necessarily.
Not really.
Yeah, it was a decent match. I did think that it was strange how loud Piper was on the microphone, just because of his history with his promos,
right?
Like, and how great he was on the mic, mm-hmm. to be so loud was strange to me. Like, I figured that he would know how to work a mic a little better. Because after everything, he's like, "Do you quit? Do you quit?" And he's like yelling. He's like, "Hart, what do you say?" And I'm like, "All right."
Yeah, he was a little obnoxious.
Yeah,
and I guess that sounds weird talking about Piper as being obnoxious, right. But the way he executed the bit didn't seem to accentuate the bit,
right?
Which is not Piper like. My problem with this match was, again, it's kind of a gimmick match where it. I don't like gimmick matches that limit the ability of the people in it.
Yes, yeah.
Like, we saw that Jake the Snake, Rick Martel one back in 6, I guess, or something.
7.
Like 7. And, you know, you're watching two great wrestlers kind of hampered. Like, these guys could have put on a really good show if it weren't for the style of match they were wanting them to do.
Yeah.
I wanted to see them do a different match. So,
yeah.
Or if they could have just had a regular match, and I think they do them more like this now, but just a lot more action, and then we go for a submission
mm-hmm.
once our opponent's tired enough or once they've been beaten.
Right.
Like we'll say, like, the Rock Mankind I Quit match, where mm-hmm. those two just beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah, beat the hell out of
each other. And then we do I Quit.
Right.
Instead of, like, hit, stomp, crossface.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
So I just... I wanted to see these guys.
Irish whip into the corner. What do you say? No, we don't need that. Exactly. Don't need that, Piper.
Armbar. Do you quit?
Yeah.
We got Bret Hart here. I want to watch him wrestle.
Yes.
That's kind of my thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But, of course, JR's there to interview Bob Backlund on the way back to the back.
Yeah.
And Bob isn't happy.
He's acting super crazy.
He looks just, like, dazed, and not to borrow a line from a movie, but he just looks dazed and confused.
Yeah.
He doesn't understand what's happening. He's having a mental breakdown in his brain.
Yeah.
It's just weird. Just this whole gimmick's driving me nuts.
I think he said he saw the light or something.
Yes, like, he saw the light via the sharpshooter.
Yeah.
But we then go to Nick, also still cannot find Pam in the back. She can't be found. He's looked everywhere in the building,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't turn out to be true.
No.
She was found.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's at his wit's end. He just cannot find her. But we got to do the match anyway. We can't not do the match. So we go to Todd, and he's interviewing Big Daddy Cool Diesel.
Yeah.
And not the best promo I've seen Kevin Nash cut.
Right.
But... getting the job done. He gets weirdly inflamed at one point, and like, he just all of a sudden starts yelling for no real reason. There's no ramp up to it. It looked to me like he forgot what he was going to say, and then to cover it, he just got really belligerent. So we're done with that promo, and let's get the match started. We're going to introduce Jonathan Taylor Thomas, who gets a warm response from the Connecticut crowd, mm-hmm. more than I wanted. I wanted to be booed roundly,
yeah.
but he wasn't. He high-fives all the people on the way down.
Mm-hmm.
Fink looked really happy to meet him.
Yeah, he did.
When he shook his hand, I'm not sure I've ever seen him look so happy.
Oh, my God. I love you on the television.
I love that show that you're on.
You are the best as Randy.
Then we introduce Nick Turturro as he comes down to be our guest announcer. Mm-hmm. And the I'm Just a Sexy Boy music starts. HBK is walking down to the ring, escorting the lovely Jennifer McCarthy, who's looking beautiful. And then he sits her down at ringside.
Mm-hmm.
What was funny to me in that was that right where, because they're right on the barricade.
Yes,
the fans were more interested in Shawn Michaels than they just plopped down a really hot girl next.
Yeah.
Like, they had a kid who just was almost like moving her out of the way so he could take a picture of Shawn Michaels. That's wrestling fans for you, man. Right. I loved it.
That's awesome.
Because she's just like, oh, I'm the hottest woman. I'm the hottest woman that any of you all have ever seen. Would you mind moving? I need to take a picture of Shawn Michaels.
I need to take a picture of the sexy boy.
And then we go right to the entrance, and the glass breaks, and Diesel comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Weird.
It was apparently, this was originally, he had glass breaking, but not for very long. And then it was like glass breaking, and then a horn.
I don't like it. No. Because when you hear the glass, that's my ass, apparently, and I want to see Stone Cold Steve Austin come out of that.
Yeah.
That was so weird that they used that for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they there was no Stone Cold at this time.
Right.
It was just so weird to see that used before.
They do repurpose things from time to time.
And they finally found a really good purpose. Yeah. But Diesel comes out. He walks about halfway down the ramp, and he turns back and extends his hand, and the beautiful Pam Anderson comes out.
Yeah.
Because that is now his prize, Miss Pam Anderson. Walks her out, sits her down in the chairs, again, to fans that are, I don't know, still want to just take pictures of Shawn Michaels or something like that.
Still excited for the wrestlers.
But now we're ready for, I guess, what I'll consider the main event of wrestling. This is about a close. This is about a 20-minute match of Shawn Michaels pretty much just wrestling himself.
Yep.
And what did you think of this match, sir?
Overall, it was a really good match. Yeah. I did. I was watching it, and I said Shawn Michaels. He was definitely very, very good, but he was kind of wrestling like a dickhead. Like he was watching like some of the moves he was doing. He's like, I'm going to lose, but I'm just going to fucking do the best that I can. I'm going to make this guy look silly.
Yeah, really overselling early.
Yep.
And like, because this match started out really fast. It looked like they'd done this match about 50 times in house shows.
Mm-hmm.
Because the beginning of this match just, it seemed like they knew where each other was going to be. And nothing kind of, it didn't look kind of natural. It just looked like, oh, spot one, spot two, spot three, instead of... because Michaels is launching himself everywhere.
Yeah.
It seems like the point of the beginning of this match was to see how far and how high Kevin Nash could throw Shawn Michaels. But, you know, this match didn't seem – this is going to sound weird, but it didn't seem super believable to me.
Yep.
I just – it didn't seem like Kevin Nash got hit with anything that would devastate him.
Yeah.
And the slower moments in the match just looked like resting points before we figured out – before Shawn Michaels figured out just how he was going to do his next big death-defying stunt.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, like, the psychology of this match didn't really make sense to me.
Right. There was definitely – I could see that. And I was watching it, and I was like, Shawn Michaels is absolutely the best in the game at this point. Like, he was incredible. But there was, like – we mentioned – I mentioned Ric Flair's – statement about Shawn Michaels wrestling a ladder. Like, this one would be more apt to say, like, Shawn Michaels was basically alone in this ring.
Yeah.
Like, if Diesel wasn't there and Shawn Michaels was just wrestling air, the match would have just been probably just as good. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. This is, as braggadocious as Kevin Nash is and for all that he went on to accomplish with the NWO, when you watch these two in the ring, and this was... This was probably Kevin Nash at his height, at his best, probably in the ring, and he just really looked like a commoner. Like you're watching someone that's just an incredible athlete, incredible level performer against someone with the belt that's just not as good,
just not that good.
And so you know it's Shawn trying to figure out how to have an incredible... Because, you know, he's got to carry this guy, and he has to have the longest match of the night.
Yep.
And it's the one that people have to remember because we're doing the gimmick match next. So they put him in a really tough spot and, you know...
Yeah. Because, like, also, it's like, you have no idea how well LT's going to be able to do in the ring.
Right.
So Shawn's like, all right, this has to be the best wrestling match on the card, or this is the one that people have to remember. Like, oh, we're really good wrestlers here.
Right.
So Shawn's like, all right, I'm putting this company on my back, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And then, obviously, like, Bam Bam also had to do the same thing in a way. But Shawn Michaels had to put wrestling on his back and, like, okay, this is what we can do.
And I have to do all this, and I got a job.
Yeah, right?
So... It was a tough night for Shawn Michaels, but, I mean, again, people call him the best in-ring performer in the history, and it's after you watch this, it's hard to argue because he does everything.
Yeah.
Anything else from this match that you thought?
Sid Vicious, who was in Shawn Michaels' corner, his hair looked like ramen noodles. That's pretty much...
That's what you got?
Yeah, that's the only other note I have.
He always had that look about him.
Yeah.
Longer, shorter, any length. I would imagine if he shaved his head, he would still have some sort of ramen noodle consistency.
Oh, also one other thing. Diesel motioned for the jackknife when he like throws his fist in the air,
right?
There was a decent amount of boos. Like the crowd was booing him when he made the motion for it.
Well yeah, because he did that like little phony Hulk up bit.
Yeah.
Which it just seems so ingenuine. Like everything he does to me seems just ingenuine. He just seems like a giant douche to me. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But actually, I do know why, because he's a giant douche. and so, like, he was trying to do this because he was so devastated by Shawn Michaels just barely knocking him about that he had to Hulk up.
Yeah.
And then you're right. He goes, he does the motion, and half the crowd goes, meh.
Yeah. No, don't care about you.
But at the end of this match, Shawn Michaels gets him with the kind of, I call it the abbreviated chin music. He doesn't do like the full wind up for it.
Mm-hmm.
Knocks him out. Hebner's on the outside of the ring because he's hurt.
Yeah.
And so it's that situation where I've clearly beat this dude. I got the 1-2-3, but the refs. And
yeah.
That's what Sid's there for.
Yeah.
To, you know, pick up Earl and throw him in the ring because all he's got, it doesn't matter if his ankle's hurt.
Right. It's
all you got to do is count to three, but Sid doesn't do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, so basically Nash is able to do his comeback and get the win. And then after that, of course, Jim Ross is there to interview right on the ramp.
Yeah.
And he Sean's too tired to talk, of course, because he just carried a 7-foot guy for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But Sid's got some stuff to say.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what it was because he was yelling really loud. But then, you know, Kevin Nash is now in the ring with both ladies, who are, I guess, are the prize.
Yeah.
And Jonathan Taylor Thomas and Nick Tuturo.
Yeah.
We're doing our big celebration of celebrity. And
Diesel's music's playing, and it's just a blues riff. And I'm like, this does not work.
You're right.
Blues does not get me excited for anything. For a celebration, you don't play blues. Like, oh, this is a party. Like,
that's right.
We just got married. What do we play? BB King? You got some BB King? Like, no, you don't. That's not something that you do.
Nope. It was kind of an anticlimactic end to this one. But after they show them celebrating in the middle of the ring, we go back to the back with Todd interviewing the Heartbreak Kid. And, he's just blaming the ref for all of this. And he's upset. So, hey. That's the way it goes, man.
Yeah.
I bet we'll see something else happen.
No, from that. Probably. Yeah,
No. He's gonna come back. He's gonna get his shot again. And now we go to the main event, and we start to introduce all of the wrestlers that are. I couldn't tell. Is this a lumberjack match, or are we just having people at ringside?
Just people at ringside.
We've got 20 photographers.
Yeah.
We've got five wrestlers, 5 football players. There's too much shit outside the ring.
There's a lot of stuff happening.
But we introduce the following football players down in the ring. Ken Norton Jr. introduced as Ken Norton for some reason, former Dallas Cowboy. Chris Spielman, Detroit Lion great. Ricky Jackson, can't remember. Carl Banks, fellow New York Giant linebacker with Lawrence Taylor. And then, who's the last one?
And there's two more. Steve
Mongo McMichael.
Yeah.
And then the All-Pro Reggie White.
Yes.
They all come down, and now they're there to support. They're all wearing jerseys so that we know who they are.
Yep. Appreciate it.
And then we introduce wrestlers down to the ring. We've got Tatanka.
King Kong Bundy.
King Kong Bundy, who's
Nikolai Volkoff.
Nikolai, what is he wearing? He's not wearing his Russian stuff. He was wearing like this.
Oh yeah, he's part of the Million Dollar Team, so he's got like one of those fake tuxedos but it's like the Million Dollar Man.
No. Put on your Russian stuff.
Yeah.
I can't handle it.
Yeah, then there's Kama, then IRS, and Ted DiBiase, because it's the Million Dollar Team.
Well, now we have about 50 people at ringside.
Yeah.
And now we introduce the combatants of our main event, which is between
Bam Bam Bigelow versus Lawrence Taylor.
We introduce Bam Bam Bigelow, and he comes to the ring.
Yeah, and he scares Salt and Pepper.
He scares him.
Yeah.
He's going to go after Salt and Pepper. And then we introduce Lawrence Taylor, which gets a nice pop from the crowd.
Yep.
He's with some guy that I couldn't tell who he was.
Yeah, I didn't get his name.
Yeah, but he's in his LT warm-up suit.
Yep.
And he gets to the ring, and he takes off his warm-up suit, and he's got his big white shirt that says LT so that nobody forgets who he is. Of the two people in the ring, the man with the white shirt with the large LT on it is Lawrence Taylor.
Gotcha.
So don't forget that.
Thank you.
But this match kind of starts off with the stare down in the middle of the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Bam Bam pushes LT,
who's
not going to take it.
No, of course not.
He comes back, stare down again, and then And then LT just hauls off and slaps him,
yep.
Which is pretty much his only offense of the night.
Yep.
What did you think of this match, sir?
I thought LT did a much better job than I was expecting, but Bam Bam,
really?
Bam Bam obviously had to carry the match. I thought, but I wasn't expecting much from LT. There was a few times where I was watching it and like Bam Bam was like doing a couple working punches, and then LT was not selling it. So right. Bam Bam laid into him. Like, I don't know how hard, like how stiff he was. Like, he definitely didn't, like, wasn't going for, like, the kill or anything, right. But he was hitting him, like, okay, you're not going
to
sell?
He was trying to make it look good.
Yeah.
Because you're right. LT wasn't really able to sell a lot. Mm-hmm. It seemed like he spent a lot of his time kind of just on his knees in front of Bam, just trying to get up or whatever.
Yeah.
But there wasn't that, like you said, like that rapport between the two of them.
Yeah.
Where it's like, hey, here's my time to beat on you a little bit, and then you come back.
Yeah.
It was like, no matter what offense Bam Bam was doing, LT would try and fight back initially,
yeah,
or right at the time,
mm-hmm.
and then it would just look bad as they were doing it.
Yeah, like Bam Bam was like, no, this is the part where you're supposed to be on the ground, so I'm going to fucking hit you in the back of your head, and you're going to be on the ground.
There's a little spot where Bam Bam gets him in a Boston Crab, and they do that little bit where LT's struggling to get to the ropes, but Bam Bam pulls him back to the middle of the ring, and then he finally gets to that where they're trying to egg the crowd on to cheer for LT. I don't know, this with all those people on the apron, I just was wondering if someone was going to get involved. Yeah. Or I don't know.
I think that the match should have ended with like a big kerfuffle, like all 10 guys, and then somehow something happens. Pat Patterson can't control everybody, and then like somehow Bam Bam gets knocked out, and then like everybody leaves the ring. Taylor's there to pin him, so that way it's like Bam Bam doesn't lose any face for actually losing the match instead of getting pinned cleanly.
Yeah, I was really surprised at the clean pin.
Yeah,
because it makes everyone in the business look bad.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Plus, LT did nothing to really look dominant.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, I don't know, it looked really bad.
Yeah, did not look good.
Any other thoughts about this match? Because one thing I was surprised was that LT took and Bam Bam is so agile for a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
That moonsault was really, really looking, but I really looked great, but I was surprised that LT took it.
Yeah.
Because that was kind of a big move to take.
Yeah.
So that was a little props. But
yeah, I thought LT looked much better than Mr. T did.
Like, oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, like LT looked pretty dead at the end of this, like when they were lifting him up on his shoulders. But he was a gamer. He kept going throughout. Like, he didn't give up. He was like, I have to be in this match for the rest of it. Yeah, so
Bam Bam carried the match. He got it to a point where he did a flying headbutt off the top rope. LT took it, got the two count.
Yeah.
And then he looked kind of surprised that Bam Bam looked surprised that it was only two. And then what looked kind of odd, and this is kind of the selling part that you learn after being in the business for a long time, but suddenly, because LT went into the finishing spot instead of maybe looking like he'd just taken a headbutt for a two count.
Yeah.
And then he just kind of went into it with full energy, and then he does the three flying forearms, mm-hmm. And then the last one, like three flying forearms, two from the ground and then one from the second rope, way to get up there, LT.
Yeah.
And, of course, that knocks out Bam Bam Bigelow. LT gets the 1-2-3 for the win, and then the feed just cut off.
Yeah.
So a lot of technical problems with this one, but we end WrestleMania 11 with Lawrence Taylor standing victorious with a bunch of football players and mm-hmm. wrestlers that look confused.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's get to our awards of the night. Who is your pop of the night, Mr. Jouet?
My pop of the night goes to when The Undertaker got his earn back. That was actually got a pretty big pop.
There were a couple really good ones. I thought Bret Hart had a good response. Piper, of course, had a great response. I'm going to give it to Backlund only because I was so surprised at all the heat that he got. But he was that was a pretty big pop for him.
Nice.
My bump of the night was Mr. Yokozuna flying out of the ring mm-hmm. on the double drop kick. That is a lot of weight to jettison backwards and then land straight on the floor. That was impressive to me. What is your bump of the night?
My bump of the night, it was Jeff Jarrett Irish whipping the 1-2-3 kid into the ropes, and then when 1-2-3 kid came back, Jarrett just threw him up in the air, and then went to the kid, just took a front, like, just a front bump, just flat on his face.
That looked really good.
It looked really good, especially considering, like, Jeff Jarrett's, like, 6'1", 6'2". He's not a very tall guy.
Right.
But he gave a lot of air. Gave 123 Kid a lot of air.
What is your botch of the night, sir?
My botch of the night was Lex Luger slamming Jacob on top of the Bulldogs, on top of Bulldog and Eli.
There were a couple of botches in the Diesel HBK match, the power press slam that was kind of failed a little bit.
Yep.
The knee lift that Diesel would administer to HBK that was supposed to jettison him over the top rope didn't get enough momentum on him.
Yep.
So he kind of had to throw himself out of the ring.
Mm-hmm.
But my botch of the night is going to go to the chess match between Jonathan Taylor Thomas and Bob Backlund. My spot of the night is the entire opening kind of salvo from Diesel and HBK.
Mm-hmm.
Real fast-paced, really big moves, and Shawn Michaels just being thrown around like a rag doll. And
yeah.
I think he touched every single square foot of that ring.
Oh, yeah.
It was fast and it was nice. What is your spot of the night?
My spot of the night is Undertaker's old school. Like, just walking the ropes.
Yep.
It's, like I said, it doesn't make sense in terms of the reality of a match, but as a mark, I love it.
Watching it, I just wish he would have knocked him down.
Yeah.
He did all that work, and it looked great, and then just no real response from Bundy.
Yeah.
I hope he popped him one time to say, hey, sell for me, you son of a bitch. I don't care how much of a veteran you are.
Yeah.
You sell for me. My worst match of the night was the Undertaker-Bundy match.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't any chemistry between the two, and I thought just the way that Bundy kind of worked in it really kind of diminished what the match could be. And so I was just really disappointed in that one. What's your worst match of the night?
My worst match of the night goes to the Allied Powers versus the Blue Brothers.
I think that's totally fair.
Yeah. It was a decent match, but overall, like, nothing.
Yeah, it was the first match of the night, and there wasn't that energy to it or the pace to it. I don't think it really set a good tone.
Right.
What was your best match of the night?
My best match of the night, I'm going to go with Shawn and Diesel.
Ooh.
Shawn Michaels versus Diesel.
I'm going to disagree wholeheartedly on that
because
having to watch Kevin Nash for 20 minutes just kind of set me off. But my best match of the night was the tag team match between the Smoking Guns, Owen Hart, and Yokozuna.
Yeah.
I thought all four put in really good performances.
I think you're right.
And I just thought it was a really good match.
Yeah.
Really good match. Jue, for WrestleMania 11, who is your MVP?
My MVP is Shawn Michaels. Like, the best match was Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
He had the best match, and it just so happened to be that he was in the ring with Diesel. But in the MVP is Shawn Michaels because he did 20 minutes all essentially by himself.
Yeah. I'm going to totally agree. It was Shawn Michaels, 20 minutes by himself.
Yeah.
He looked amazing.
He did.
So that's all that we have for WrestleMania 11. Let's look forward to WrestleMania 12 real quick. We have Shawn Michaels versus Bret Hart, the 60-minute Iron Man match.
Oh,
I'm really excited to see that.
It'll be good.
Undertaker versus Diesel.
Ooh.
Ultimate Warrior versus Triple H.
Yeah.
And we also have a debut of a Mr. Stone Cold, Steve Austin.
Oh, really?
Also, a little spoiler, Roddy Piper is also on the card, not as a guest referee. So,
no way.
No way.
No way.
Yeah, so come back and see exactly what part he played in all of this. But until then, I am Terry Home Improvement Catlett here with NYPD Blues, Jue Holt, and signing off, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.